podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it's the weekend, and it's John Givens hosting this week. I'm joined by Harrison Ward and by Dan Morgan and by Andy Bell. And to talk about some actual football, we've got some football to discuss. Liverpool played two pre-season friendlies the other night, and we're going to analyse both of those. The first one against Wacker in part one, and then the other one against Stuttgart in part four. In between of those, we've got Sean O'Donnell on the glorious return of the Boss Knights coming to Liverpool August Bank Holiday weekend, which is very exciting indeed. And I've also got Peter Jones talking about his new book on Billy Liddle, which is entitled Liddle at 100. But we'll start with the Wacker game. I'll run through the lineup if you can't remember. First of all, it was Karius in goal. That was interesting, wasn't it? Trent played right back, Matip and Ben Davis. He is real at centre half. Beck played at left back, and then a midfield of Clarkson, Morton and Kane, and then a front three of Gordon, Origi and Minamino. We'll start with Trent, Andy. It was nice to have him back.
Yeah, absolutely. It was. He was kind of the only one who it seemed to be very much a very strong team, and then some of the second string lads or the younger lads, but Trent was obviously in that one, so he could kind of ease his way back in and didn't have to go full hammer and tongs and the intensity of the second game, which was just a little bit quicker, better opposition, this, that and the other. So yeah, no, I enjoyed his performance. You know, you can see he's kind of playing within himself, and as I say, just easing his way back in. Interesting to hear Klopp's comments just before the game about like how they actually would like to do this a little bit more often, the half-hour games, and they just can't really get anyone to agree to it.
Come now for half an hour.
Exactly.
It's like trying to book Harrison for five. if he hasn't got his rider there, he hasn't got his appearance fee, he's not having it.
This is it. So yeah, so he was kind of saying that means we can do a half an hour at full blast rather than 45 minutes at kind of testimonial speed. And that'll be better for Trent. That's what they want at this point. And yeah, it looks good. So we can have all these guys back as soon as possible and round to go for the start of the season, because we look a lot better, in a lot better shape, so I'm sure we're going to come on to talk about, than other teams around us.
Yeah, we will talk about that if we have time at the end of sort of part four, but it is interesting comparing Liverpool's pre-season plans to others and their lack of. But I hadn't thought about that with Trent, about the fact that he probably played the first game, because he did think it'd be a bit less intense, but it's a really
maybe Conor Bradley's going to be number one next.
Oh, you boys, I tell you, you green in my army, you just want to back them.
Maybe the first ever Northern Ireland international to play a competitive game for Liverpool. McGilton never did it. Ryan McLaughlin never got a game. So
and now Hugh Dallas has signed a new contract. Sorry, Stuart Dallas. Hugh Dallas used to be a ref, didn't he, Dan? Back in the day, yeah, he used to ref them in the old firm games. Let's get away from it.
Name now.
Joe Matip, he's been impressive in training, looked okay, and nice to see a decent little game from Ben Davis as well. In fact, I thought for the back line generally sort of did all right.
Yeah, I mean, you have to sort of dig between the context of it being first game of pre-season and stuff, but, you know, I think as much as they'll want to do as much as they can in terms of fitness, as we know Liverpool do with them in at this time, you know, when you have a look at them and you get your first glimpse of them, I think you want to see things like touch and how, you know, how familiar they are with the ball. I mean, the professional footballers at the most elite level at the end of the day, but that sort of quickness of turn, of pace on the ball and the ability to sort of be reading the game is what you're looking for from individual performances. They're not going to be team performances by any stretch of the imagination, because we know the sort of put together. But yeah, I've been impressed with Matip in terms of just his comeback in general. It was one of those where when he went out, it was just like, he's out and we have to wait until we're told that he's back in and around it. But yeah, it's good to see him and Trent back. You know, I think the manager said that there'll be no chance that Virgil and Joe Gomez get the next one. But you would imagine they're not too far off as well. And just the boost for the squad, I think, you know, having those two there, looking like they're getting back to full intensity, having Alexander-Arnold and Joel Matip involved in games, and then you're starting to filter players back in slowly, gradually, and before you know it, you've got a full squad. Everyone's gearing towards Norwich, and you know, they're all feeling good about it.
Yeah, it's a good point. Joe Matip was further along than I thought he'd be at this stage, but it's brilliant to have him there. And I think takes the pressure off a little bit, the other two as well. He were just in the stands waving, which I enjoyed, seeing some nice waves. I want to ask you about these young midfielders, Harrison, because he plays Clarkson, Morton and Kane, and I thought they all did okay. And just to get sort of your sort of insight, if you like, because you're in a similar position, and in a funny way, you're breaking through at Marine at the moment. Everyone will have seen Marine's antics in the FA Cup. You're part of the youth subset up there, but you've been playing in these pre-season games for the first team, which is boss for you. So I'm interested to get into a little bit of the mindset of some of these lads, because it must be quite hard in a way, because you want to show off a bit, you want to show your talents, but at the same time, you know, there'll be instructions, you know, there'll be a style of play. So for these guys, for someone like Clarkson, who's got a great range of passing like yourself, do you know, and then, you know, it must be not difficult for him, but is it a balance between, you know, you want to showcase yourself, but you also want to show you that you're a team player, and that, you know, you're playing, you know, up front with guys, you know, if they're playing with a Regio Minamino, the senior pros, so getting them the ball.
Nah, definitely. I think they're in an environment where they've got other young lads around them and they've got senior pros around them, which allows them to be comfortable and to be themselves. I think the first team lads will welcome them in, and they'll want them to show their own ability and not to be nervous. I think for them playing, I think first of all they want to do the basics right, so the first three or four passes, little 5 yards, keep it ticking, keep it moving, and then as the game progresses, obviously it's harder than half an hour games, isn't it? But as the game goes on, you do feel a bit more comfortable and that you can do stuff. I think getting talked through the game as well, obviously it was a young side, wasn't it, that played, but the likes of Trent and all that, you know, if even if you just knocked it into an area for Origi to chase it down, you just know that you're putting it in areas. But the tactical side of it, I think that's the bit where the managers will be looking at a lot, where they are in defensive phases and attacking phases. So if they get taught that as they get along and playing with better players in high tempo games, but I think that's the foundation where the management will be watching. But in terms of on the ball, I think, yeah, if they just get through the first three or four passes in the first 5 or 10 minutes, then the free, I think the senior pros in the team and that will talk them through the game, like I said. So yeah, you're a bit nervous and that, but once you get through the first 5 minutes, I think you're flying, especially when you're getting taught through the game. So yeah.
Now, it's interesting because you mentioned there the sort of the tactical side, and that's what maybe we don't look at as supporters, but it's what, you know, the manager's drumming into them, and that's what they have to show as much as the, you know, the expansive passing that we did see. Andy and Harrison used the word, the phrase there around sort of feeling comfortable in the environment, and they all did, and that's a testament to the senior pros who, you know, helped them out a lot. And, you know, they always mention Milner and things like that, don't they, as someone, but I'm sure, you know, they're all doing it. And there was a really nice story from Harvey Elliott last week about Mo Salah telling him off for eating too much bread and things like that. And they are obviously sort
of... Imagine if Salah seen you.
But he's ironing him for lunch. Won't be happy. I'll let you off that one, kid. It's the environment that makes them perform, does it? It's the environment that makes them feel comfortable, and that's what they've clearly got.
Massively, as I was saying earlier on, I wondered if there would be a little bit more experience in that team, maybe a Milner thrown in.
Still
there.
Still laughing at Harrison there for leaving that one in.
Yeah, they love shoehorning a Milner into a young team just to kind of balance it out, and he kind of enjoys being that leader and talking them through it and this, that and the other. And I looked at the team, and I was kind of working out in my head. Obviously, the result doesn't matter at all, especially in a half-hour game. You can't really, you know, pay any attention to any sort of result that comes out of that. But I was trying to work out, because Wacker Innsbruck are obviously second division in Austria, and how does that compare to kind of the league our academy are playing in? It's very difficult to gauge that. And there were six or seven academy players in that team, or certainly four or five at least. And they did look completely comfortable. I think Clarkson, you mentioned there, I was really impressed with him. I think Craig mentioned about his kind of diminutive stature, but I thought that enabled him to kind of get in and about and get stuck in. And
no sense of gravity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and kind of was able to cover the ground, and he certainly wasn't playing like it was a pre-season game. Obviously showed his range of passing ability as well, which is a great mix to have. And I thought for Gordon, actually, on the wing, excuse my ignorance, he was somebody I hadn't really heard of, or certainly hadn't seen play.
He's been at the club less than a year. They got him in from Derby, so you haven't had huge amounts of chances to watch him.
So, you know, he really impressed me. And I think for players like Clarkson and like Gordon, they're at that stage of their development and coming through where they're just completely fearless. Nobody cares if they have a bad half hour where nothing comes off. You know, it's not going to affect their career. Whereas somebody like a Minamino and an Origi, I thought Minamino was trying to play a little bit safe at times. He seems to sort of cut inside, try and find the centre forward defeat. And kind of looked a little bit like a one-trick pony at times, just because he really has the pressure to prove himself this summer, otherwise he could be out the door. So I'm enjoying watching the fearlessness of the young lads. You know, Gordon nutmegged somebody at one point, which was great, was winning free kicks all over the place. The fella just resorted to booting them, which was which was quite funny. And I'm looking forward to seeing them again, because as we were kind of talking in the pre-pod there, a lot of the players who have come back, like Jota and Robertson, probably won't be ready for tomorrow against Mainz. So we're going to get another look at these lads more time for them to show themselves as well, possibly getting 45 minutes instead of the 30. And I'm looking forward to them showing what they can do against maybe higher level opposition.
You like Gordon, didn't you, Harrison?
Yeah, I missed the game because I had 40, but I watched the highlights and some clips and all that, and he looked very technical, and he said there about Minamino being a bit safe in that, and then Gordon, he's going for nutmegs, really, and he's committing to them. It's what you want to see for a young lad, isn't it? Oh, he's 16, coming to the first team. You know, every Liverpool fan's watching on the app and all that who can, and him to do that and showcase his talent, you know, can I say fair play to him? And I think he's brought 2 years younger than Harvey Elliott, so he's got Harvey Elliott to look up to in a way where Harvey Elliott was breaking through at 16, maybe a bit more intensely, you know, playing Premier League matches for Fulham and all that, and getting moved to Liverpool. But he's definitely got someone, and similarities, hasn't he, to Harvey Elliott? He's got that left foot, and he can commit players, and he's technically gifted player, so looks exciting. He does look a good little signer for Liverpool.
Yeah, looks a really good player. The two up top then, Origi and Minamino, is a shop window for you, Dan, or do you think either of them have got it sort of within them to actually sort of force the managers, you know, change of mind? I mean, we don't know. I mean, I'm guessing what the manager's thinking with both of them. You know, you can't be quite sure. But Origi gets his goal. It's a penalty, but it's a decent finish. Minamino was okay. You know, what is this pre-season for them too, do you think?
You'd often get the feeling that the manager would be happy to keep most of that group that often get talked about. You know, you put Shaqiri in there and one or two others, and you know, first things first, it's clear that they're not a bad influence in the training facilities and around the players in the dressing room. So he won't be focused on getting them out for that reason, because clearly it's not an issue there. I think what we often neglect to look at when situations like this arise is, you know, they will be mindful of what's best for the players as well. And, you know, if Minamino feels like his options will be limited at Liverpool, for example, and he doesn't feel like he can maximise his potential through playing a game every six or whatever it might be, then, you know, he might feel like he's pushing for the move. And I think Liverpool will adhere to that and will help him with that. But it's massively sort of behind the scenes, isn't it, of what we don't know and what's going on constantly. And I think there will be an element of people playing for moves, not necessarily through games, but just through situations of where, you know, where the clubs are at, who's in for them, you know, what's going on at Liverpool, where they are in the pecking order. I personally think, you know, I think I said on a show the other day that I think Minamino could be one who we find just sort of out of nowhere this summer is heading somewhere for between 20 and 25 million. And I think that is one where everyone will just sort of say that's absolutely fine. It's a good deal for all involved. And, you know, best of luck. And I think there's a bit of an emotional attachment to the likes of Shaqiri and Origi as well, but it just doesn't look like those offers are there. And looks like they haven't been for the last 2 years, really. So I'd be surprised if someone all of a sudden decides, you know, they're going to make either of those a central priority for them, and it's a deal that suits. But I think Minamino, yeah, I think I haven't seen enough of him that tells me that he can change the things that are wrong. And I think, without being too harsh on the lad, I just don't think he's going to make it at Liverpool. And for 7 million quid, he'll probably go on to get sold at a profit of maybe 15 to 20 million. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah, we shall see. We're going to take a little break in the room now that you've got those inserts, Sean from Boss Knight and Peter Jones on his Billy Little book, and then we'll all be back to talk about Liverpool v Stuttgart. I'm John Gibbons for the weekend, and I'm joined over Zoom by Sean O'Donnell from Boss, because Boss Knights are back, Sean. It's very exciting to say. It must be even more exciting for you to hear.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, I didn't know when this day would come, to be honest. You know, I'm actually surprised it's come so soon after, you know, what we've been going through over the last 18 months or whatever. But, you know, absolutely made up and delighted to say that, you know, we're back August Bank Holiday weekend.
Yeah, there's so much we've missed about the matches, and but this is part of it. You know, we've all missed going to games. You know, it's been a long time since, you know, we've had full stadiums. That Atletico Madrid one, lost time. A lot of people have even been in the ground. You know, a lucky few managed to get in a little bit, but it hasn't been the same. Coming back to next season, hopefully with full stadiums and with stuff like this, it's all part of it, isn't it? It's all part of that match day culture that was a huge part of our lives, and we're realising just how much.
It is. And you know, you forget just how much a bigger part of a life it was. You know, I think going back to the ground, I've been again thinking about that so long, the last 18 months. I never managed to get in during the you know, the games when there was sort of like small numbers and stuff. So I first and foremost, I can't wait to get back on the ground. But yeah, getting straight back into you know, the second home game with the boss night straight after it just feels good and feels special. So yeah, really looking forward to it.
Yes, it's after Chelsea. It's bank holiday weekend, which feels apt. I feel like the moment on bank holidays, they're probably not. But in my head, it's been, we're off work Monday, it's fine. But 28th of August, which is after Chelsea, obviously Chelsea's a half five. So it feels like a bit of a perfect moment for you, that, doesn't it? You know what I mean? Maybe out at lunch, you know, we'll like breakfast or something, a few beers, back to Chelsea, then off to Boston. It can't be bad.
Yeah, that's it. So we've actually got two on that weekend. So we've got the you know, the standard boss night.
Yeah, but I can't go the kids one, Sean. I'm worried about Saturday night. I mean, tend to be young.
The Saturday night one will be the one, you know, that's the one that, you know, we're really looking forward to. Don't get me wrong, the kids one will be brilliant as well. But the Saturday night one is the proper boss night, so to speak. We've gone back to basics a bit with this one because, you know, for the last few big ones at the Olympia, we've had to do something a bit different, try and go a bit, you know, always trying to push ourselves to go the extra mile with each other that comes. But with this one, I think, you know, it's been so long, let's just go back to the basics. It's all the lads who normally do it. So we've got Timo, Ben Bear, Keo, and obviously Jamie headlining, which will be, you know, the main thing what everyone's looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, just a shout on Jamie, because obviously since you've last sort of done stuff together, you know, he hasn't been able to perform as much as you like, but, you know, he's had a top 10 album and things like that. You know, he's done incredibly well. You must be really proud of, you know, the part that you've played in development, but also proud of your mates, sort of how well he's done. The top 10 album is incredible.
Absolutely. He's, you know, he's a superstar now. You know, you think about saying, I think when we go away and stuff, and when we do shows in places like Denmark, honestly, it's like going away with one of the Beatles. He's absolutely hounded, and, you know, to be fair to him, he's brilliant to everyone he speaks to. But yeah, you know, the pandemic has been, no, it's not been good for anyone, but I feel like he's really sort of, you know, spent the time wisely and recorded music, put music out there, and, you know, his album's brilliant, isn't it? So, to answer your question, yeah, I am proud, to be honest, to know, like, the rest of the lads are of what he's done, and I've told him as well, so I'm sure he knows it as well, but yeah.
But the fact is that he still wants to be involved with you guys just shows how much he loves it. And I know for the fact, because he's told me he loves them kids ones, doesn't he? So the fact that he's got them on the Sunday afternoon, he'll probably be looking forward to that more than us. Or sweaty dickheads shouting at him, do you know what I mean? He's like, he loves them kids ones, doesn't he? And to be fair, it's a brilliant atmosphere.
Yeah, he always says when he's playing to the kids that this is the best crowd I've played in front of. So, but no, I mean, the kids one will be brilliant, and that's something that we've obviously brought on over as the years have gone by. You know, as they've got bigger and sort of Jamie's got bigger, the videos on YouTube and people wanting to come and see them. But, you know, the actual boss nights are 18 plus, so the Saturday night will be 18 and over. But, you know, for the chance for the kids to go and see him on the Sunday is something that, again, we're proud of. I've been able to do that and be able to create an atmosphere, because, you know, for so long, you know, kids were sort of out the picture as far as the match was concerned. Tickets were, you know, a hard commodity to get hold of, and this was just a chance to give them the opportunity to sort of experience some of that match day culture, and that's exactly what this Sunday will be. But we're hoping this weekend will be a bit of a celebration of, you know, being back at the match. You know, despite the tough times we had over the last 18 months, and, you know, with Liverpool having a bit of a mad season, all coming back together, hopefully all pushing the right direction now to sort of push the team on, because it has been a mad 18 months. You know, I think about the stuff that we missed out on. You know, from a boss point of view, it is a bit bittersweet, because obviously we won the league and no one can take that away from us. But the things that we had planned for that league win, it was almost like perfect sort of procession from going from Kiev to Madrid and then the big league win, because honestly we had Bramley Moor docks booked, which would have been, you know, special to do something there with like 4,000 people, and then for the parade, you know, we had the arena booked as well, so it was going to be a massive celebration for winning the league, and obviously that got taken away from us. But, you know, we'll hopefully build back up. As I say, we're going back to basics with this weekend. It is just, you know, as it says on the tin, it's a boss night on the Saturday night, boss night kids on the Sunday, and hopefully we can sort of have an amazing season again and build it right up to get those special times back and those big celebrations at the end of the season.
Have you checked if Keo still knows the words? Do you know what I mean? it's been a while for him, hasn't it? Every other Saturday, there's a lot going on in that, do you know what I mean?
I don't think he knew the words anyway, to be honest.
Oh, but he sang with such style and panache, it didn't matter. So tickets on sale on Friday. This is either going out Thursday night or Friday morning. So if you're listening to this on a Friday, it's today. But what's the best way of people getting tickets?
So best way is Skiddle. So just go into Skiddle, search a Boss Night. The adult show will be on sale at 9 o'clock in the morning on Friday morning, and the kid show going on sale at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Both at the Olympia. So.
Well, it should be absolutely brilliant. Nice one for getting it on. And obviously, you know, with all these things, you have to take a bit of a punt, don't you? And things aren't going to get moved. So I know it'll have been a lot of work to get these on without necessarily knowing. But fingers crossed, it looks like they all will go ahead now. And onwards and upwards, I'm sure, you know, we've got great plans for the rest of the year and next year, mates, and people who are listening around the world who can't get to these. You know, there might be a Boss coming to them soon. Who knows?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, again, touching back on what we sort of missed out on, we had such big plans for that sort of victory season. We had shows in New York, Tokyo, Norway, all cancelled really. But we are, you know, we're in talks to get those back on, and there is stuff in the pipeline. We've got a weekend in Denmark planned in the start of September, with some big events there. So yeah, in terms of the international stuff, you know, once travel allows us to, we will be back on the road and doing it on the road.
I'll dust off me jumping for you if you want, mate, for some of these. I play a brilliant Ring of Fire, lad. I'll tell you what. Sean, best of luck with it. Top man, nice one for on this big party for us all. And I'll see you in the balcony on Saturday night.
Yeah, cheers, John. Nice one.
And it is John Gibbons, and I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by Peter Jones, who's written a book. He's got a debut book out anyway later in the year. It's called Billy Little, a 100, a family portrait of a Liverpool icon. So first of all, Peter, welcome to the Anfield Wrap.
Thanks very much for having me. Lovely to speak to you.
So people won't know listening to this, but I can see you. You're a young fella, Peter. So why have you dedicated a big chunk of your life to find out more about Billy Little?
Well, obviously I've done football history and football writing for a while now since I finished uni. So it's like 2018. So I did my two dissertations on Merseyside football, basically. Did it in the interwar period and did it in the 60s. And then since then, say 2018, I've just been writing. I did like Liverpool and Everton stuff, and then I broadened to just more football. And basically, my dad's sister, so my auntie, is good mates with Billy Little's sister. So they both did Scottish dancing together. She's Scottish dance with Billy Little as well. So that was basically like my way in, really. So obviously, I'd done my football writing, and I just thought it was a good opportunity to do it. It was a family connection, and it's all just come from there, really.
No, it's great to have that sort of personal connection to the story, and you know, I'm sure that comes across in the passion, and he's a worthy, you know, icon, as you say. You know, Liverpool at one point were known as Liverpool, weren't they? Because he was the Steven Gerrard of that time. He was Mr. Liverpool in that period.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He was there for such a long time. With World War II, it interrupted like him and pretty much every one of his peers in their careers. But so he lost a big portion of his career. Obviously, he came in 1938 from Town Hill in Dunfermline, Scotland, but didn't make his debut till 1946. But obviously that was just because of the war. But through that period, you know, he arrived as a 16-year-old and finally made his debut at 24. But he was part of the team. He was like basically the same time as Bob Paisley. They were good mates, played basically all the way through.
Yeah.
Both outside left and left half. They backed each other up, and yeah, he was there for years and just basically advanced and he was got top goal scorer. I think it was 7 out of 9 seasons in a row. And that's from the wing in days before. Like you had Salah and Mane scoring goals for fun. He was doing it just, you know, he was that good basically. Manchester United, Liverpool, that's why. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you got quite a few contributions from ex-players as well, sort of teammates and people, you know, he knew, which you must have been thrilled about, and I guess shows, you know, what high esteem he was held in by so many that they were quite happy to speak to you about the great man.
Yeah, obviously, you know, it was just mad. Obviously, I just reached out to as many people as I could, writing letters. I knew where Jamie Carragher lived because his son went to the same school as me. So I literally just knocked on his door, and his missus opened the gate up for me. I just handed her a letter, and like a couple of days later, he called me. I was happy to speak, so that was him. And then being intelligent, messaging people, managed to find out his address, posted the letter, just hoped for the best, and again, he called me.
Brilliant.
On Hanson, another one I stalked, went to his house, just knocked on his door, and his missus again let me in, and he just called me. And then I've made, they're probably the main names that people know. Hanson, Carrigan and Callaghan, and obviously they're doing the forwards for me, but I've spoken to, I've got a list here, Gordon Wallace, Gordon Milne, Johnny Morrissey, Jimmy Melia, Keith Berkinshaw, George Scott, Alex Self and Alan Banks. Obviously they're not all household names, some of them haven't played many games for Liverpool, but I think he played with like 120 players in his whole career. There's only 10 of them who are still alive today. And of that 10, I'd say about 6 are like well enough to be able to speak. Obviously, even Billy died of Alzheimer's, and a lot of the players today who were still alive suffering with similar diseases. But to be able to get to speak to people who had a part in the club, and I just keep saying it's like it's a period that's about to go extinct. So to be able to speak to them and basically just keep that legacy alive, obviously, you say, shows how highly thought of Billy was. And it's just, yeah, it was amazing to speak to all those people just as a Liverpool fan.
Absolutely. I mean, you've put in the hard yards there, haven't you? Fair play. It's a very well researched book. And I mean, you say that's your background. And so I'm sure you enjoyed it. Did anything sort of surprise you when you found out a little bit more about him? Because I guess, you know, you just sort of see, you know, we see the stats and things like that. So, you know, what a great player he was. But was there anything that particularly interested you as you found out more about him?
Yeah, well, I think probably the good thing for Billy and the bad thing for me is literally no one's got a bad word to say about him. trying to dish some dirt. I don't want to like be on him. Obviously, he's the main man, and I've loved getting to know him. But there's literally not one bad story about him out there. Everyone just loved him. Even though he was great at football, and off the pitch, he just didn't really do much. He was like so dedicated. He was playing football all the time, doing his accountancy. Went on to work at Liverpool University. Went on to be a justice of the peace. But I think the main thing is just his dedication and his just his unbelievable attitude towards football. You know, he played when he was 38, which made him the oldest post-war player when he retired. And he could have kept on playing. The only reason he stopped was because Bill Shankly had to try and clear the wage bill. He would have stayed there for however many years Liverpool wanted him. And if, you know, you look at the sports science of today, he would have played for forever. And looking at him, it's just testament to how good he was. That no one's got a bad word to say about him. Every single person who's seen him loves him.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to read it myself. And as you say, you know, he's held in such high regard, you know, in the city and within football. I'm sure there's some great stories in there from the people you're speaking to. It's not out till late in November, but you can pre-order it now. I know you've got sort of signed copies available on your website and things like that.
Yeah, so obviously you can get it on Amazon, Waterstones, all that. But you buy it through me, I get more money out of it.
I've sold books, mate. I know how it works.
But obviously, I've done the normal one, the signed copy, and then I've written to like the clubs and stuff that are obviously in important games. So I've managed to be able to reproduce programs from some of the biggest games. So the FA ever let me do the 1950 FA Cup final. I've got his testimonial. I've got an England Scotland game, which the Scottish FA ever let me reproduce, and then I've got some games from the league winning campaign 46-47, so some of them Portsmouth and Chelsea, and then so you can get them. And there's also a copy of his younger brother's autograph book, which basically went around every ground with him. It's just signatures of everyone. So if that's what interests you and you like looking at more stuff like that, you can add that on as well with the book.
Yeah, absolutely. So, the courage everyone. We'll put a link in the bio for the show, but also your Twitter. It's Peter Kenny Jones, isn't it? Your Twitter, so people
that's
can sort
the one,
of.
Yeah, there's too many Peter Joneses in the world. So. It's after Kenny Darby, so it's all right.
Yeah, absolutely. And just before you go, mate, have you thought about what you want to do next? Because obviously, this is, you know, this sort of thing's your passion, and have you thought about what you would like to do in the future?
Yeah, well, if you've got any jobs, Colin, let me know. But so I've actually got a board here. The Melwood auctions. I've got one on the board that they had there, and I managed to buy it. My missus wasn't happy with how expensive it was. I was writing on it last night, but I've got three things written up. I know the great grandson of Phil Taylor, went to school with him, so that's a project I'm interested in. Jimmy Mealy, who I spoke to for the book, was dead interested in maybe doing a book with me as well. So
great.
That's what I do. And then I was just thinking of maybe trying to start my own podcast or something, just trying to get the name up, but I won't step on your toes.
We'll be fine, mate. Don't worry. We're doing all sorts now anyway. Your podcast. Yeah, they're easy, mate. Just chatting guap. listen, mate, really nice to speak to you. Best of luck with the book. As we say, out 8th of November, but it is available to pre-order now. Do it from Peter's website because, you know, the book game's hard enough. So you do make quite a few quid more from doing it direct. So do have a little look. A nice little signed copy as well. Great for someone for Christmas. But it's Billy Liddle, a 100, a family portrait of a Liverpool icon. I'm really looking forward to it. So thanks a lot, Peter. Cheers.
Thanks very much. See you soon.
Okay, hope you enjoyed those little inserts there. And now back in the room, we're down with Harrison and Andy to talk about the second game that was played the other night. And it was against Stuttgart. I won through the team for that. It was Adrian in goal, Bradley at right back, Canate and Rhys Williams at centre half. Jamikas played left back, a midfield of Milner, Keita, and Harvey Elliott. Although we had a bit of a free roll. And then Mane, Salah, and Oxley Chamberlain, the front three. It is interesting, I'll start with you, Dan, that it's Bradley who gets the nod with Nico Williams on the bench. You know, there's a bit of talk that Nico will be available for the right price. I don't know if he had a slight little knock or something, or I suppose he would have been away with Wales as well. But it does sort of suggest that the planning for life maybe without Nico Williams is a possibility, and that they're going to have a look at Bradley and see if he can do the bits that they need him to do.
Yeah, absolutely, especially with him getting involved in that second game. You know, as Andy says, it was much more high tempo, better opposition, and around better players. So, you know, you would imagine that unless there's one that Trent needs to sit out or there's a knock somewhere that before Nico moves, that's probably might be the only place he gets some minutes for Liverpool. I think they've probably got something lined up for him. I think there's two or three teams who they're confident they can get a deal with one of them with. So yeah, I think Liverpool are wise to do that. I think if they're gonna go down that route and not invest in another right back option in the transfer market, then it's important that, you know, Bradley gets in and around the first team as much as possible, because it's probably likely then you don't see him until the League Cup starts, one would imagine. So yeah, I think it's important, and I think, you know, I think it's just in general, a few of the lads made the point before, but you know, I think the young lads will be buzzing. Not only that, you know, they're out there getting games for Liverpool, but they're in training with these players day in, day out. And often, I don't know what you think about this, Harrison, but if you're in training with good players, if you play an opposition who, you know, at your sort of youthful age and you've got a bit of confidence and you're a bit cocky with, you can sort of think, well, I play around better players every day. Players, yeah. So, you know, this doesn't faze me at all. And I think that works both ways then, because I think the management's will need the young players to fulfil a certain job in training. You know, they'll need them to press how they want them to press, and they'll need them to put the right application into the senior pros, but, you know, make sure they're not going too overboard and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a massive bonus, and I think Klopp buzzes off it. I think he gets really sort of excited by the prospect of youth around the place and the exuberance that it brings. So, you know, If Bradley is one player who they think has got the ability first and foremost, but then he ticks all those other boxes, then great. And then, as we said before, Gordon might be another from this pre-season.
Yeah, we shall see. Canate, first time we saw him in a red shirt, only half an hour, as we said all along, but you saw bits of his recovery pace. I thought Andy would showed, you know why he's the style of defender that they've gone for.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought he did everything right for their goal as well. The few people around him maybe were caught a bit out of position, mm-hmm. or didn't track the runs. I thought he closed down the run quite well and forced them to make kind of the only thing he could have done was that back heel, and then the players around him didn't really do the business for him. So yeah, I mean, as you say, it's only half an hour. It was difficult to get a real judge of the type of player he's going to be for us or what role he's going to play. I think he's, as you say, his recovery phase is fantastic. You can see he's confident to get in the ball. He always wants the ball, and he wants to take it forward. And you know, we all know he can play. So yeah, good debut from Canate. Enjoyed it. And obviously playing next to Rhys Williams, it's, you know, they obviously, I mentioned earlier in the first game that Trent was the only one from the stronger team that was kind of in the weaker game. There was Matip as well, and clearly the fact that they've thrown Rhys Williams in beside Canate, that means that they've seen enough from Canate to know that he can kind of manage him. And
yeah, good show. Yeah.
Even though, you know, Rhys Williams has obviously played a lot of games for Liverpool, has played with Phillips as well, but you'd think if it was just straight strong team and weak team, they would have thrown Matt up in with Konaté. So yeah, obviously they trust him already. He's been around a while, seems to be well liked. The manager likes him. They've got a nickname for him already, which is great. And yeah, looking forward to seeing him tomorrow night.
Tsimikas was really good. Harrison, he got a nice assist. That's where you pass to someone else and put to the ball, just so you know. It'd be good to get more from him, wouldn't it? Because last season, you know, he wasn't a lad. I'm just getting you back. last season, we didn't see enough of him at all. And to come in for a decent fee, the idea is obviously to give Andy Robertson a rest, and we weren't able to do that. You know, we do want more from him next season, don't we? And so that's a good start.
You've got to feel sorry for him a bit, though, haven't you? To get a 2-month injury and then COVID and that as well. Yeah, yeah. So some things have been out of his control, but it's more Robertson as well. We can't expect him to play another 50 games, 45 yeah. games for us. You know, we have the luxury of no international tournaments for him or Scotland not qualifying, but this summer he was there and, you know, seeing him come up against England, he was like, I'm possessed, weren't he, before it's taking its toll on him in that. Yeah, so
he was really good in that first game. He was absolutely legging it. He was thinking, this does not look like a guy that's played 50
that's
games.
Absolutely shattered, does it? No, do you know what I mean? So he's got his little 3-week break, but I think there'll be definitely more more game time, more demands from Tsimikas this season. The goal itself reminds me of Firmino at City away when we got beat 2-1.
I'm sure, yeah.
And Robertson thinks over and Firmino heads it in. And that movement, I think, last minute, making that late run past the right back as a full back and thinking it in is what Robson does so well, and that's what Tsimikas has been out in it. Mm. It's going to be demanded. So I think we're going to see upwards of 25 games in this season, and hopefully he can prove himself, because it is hard to judge on him this season because he's hardly played for us. There was times at Brighton away last season, wasn't there, where Klopp was complaining about not having 5 subs and saying that he would have took Robson off for him at times, but we only had 3, so he couldn't. So I think a lot of things last season went against him out of his control. So this season, I think we'll see a bit more from him, and hopefully he can show us what he can do.
Yeah, fingers crossed we'll see a bit more from him. Maybe a bit more from Chamberlain next season as well. Danny's been impressive in training, so we believe he's certainly impressed in that game. More of a forward role. You could see him dropping deep, which is, I guess, his natural inclination. But he's looking lively, I think, looking strong and, you know, touch wood, looking fit.
Yeah, and I think the thing we always sort of... We guiltily do about Chamberlain is we take on his sort of 2018 incumbent, and we expect that whenever he gets on the pitch. He might have been away for 3 months, and you know, you're just seeing such a great player when he first came, and we've seen this. He was like a firecracker, wasn't he? And I think now, I think maybe that after the last season he's had at Liverpool, he will have had to do some re-evaluation of where he is and what he can bring to this side. And I think it's interesting he plays that role, because, like you said, you had Elliot there and he dropped him back. And that would have been maybe easier to drop Chamberlain back into the 8. But they put him in the central role. And I just wonder whether, you know, there's a lot of Chamberlain that you get from certain elements of his camp or wherever. A lot of noise is getting mooted around what he sees himself being and what he doesn't see himself being. You know, he doesn't want to be a right back, for example, which is perfectly fine. Mm. And I wonder whether internally there's been a bit of reluctance for him to play in forward positions for Liverpool in the past, out of the fact that he saw himself as one of Klopp's number 8. But now, I think now, after last season, I think he'd be a lot more maybe open to filling in that role when Firmino doesn't play, for example, and just adopting his game a little bit and adopting his style. You know, he's had bad injuries at the end of the day, and he can't be that sort of quick touch, intense player at the same level. It's impossible, especially when you're not playing every week. It's just too hard to do. So, you know, he's got so many technical gifts that I think they can find ways to use him if they can get him confident. And that's always been the thing with him. You get him confident in pre-season and you keep him fit, I think you've got every chance.
Sadio Mane scores. He's not great in the game, to be honest with you, Andy, I don't think, but he gets a goal and that's what he's there for. And it did get me thinking that, well, last time he was on the pitch for Liverpool, he got 2. And, you know, if he can get in a Rich Raymond goal scoring form, then that'd be great this season to look into, because, you know, last season was up and down for him at best. I think you're fair to say, you know, he'd be generally hitting the levels below what he would expect and what all of us would expect from the very high standards he set. You know, the fact that he is straight away in amongst the goals, I don't think will do him any harm, especially, as I say, after finishing the season strongly in that regard.
Yeah, I think he's probably, if it was Premier League or Champions League, he might have had to have a look at that one. It looks offside. You know what's mad? At one point, the linesman kept the flag down, like when he was running through, and then put it up as if, you know, as if they were, you know, we'll have to see if VAR comes out.
Maybe that's what them fellas on the in the hut were doing on the terrace.
Maybe there were a few cameras up in the mountains. I don't know, but yeah. As for Mane, absolutely. You know, when he comes in. First season, which I actually still think was probably is the most exciting season we've seen from Mane, just because we'd been used to seeing like Lallana and Firmino and Coutinho on the wings, and he came in with all this pace. And I remember this first game against Fleetwood and being so exciting, and it was just great in that first season. Whereas more and more, as we've got better, the squad's got better, and we've had more control over games, he's been more getting those scrappy goals where it's played across to him, and the high XG goals, as people would call them. So I think that's where he's gonna get himself in next season, especially with the players around him. Like I mentioned this in another show, there was one point in the Everton home game when we lost 2-0 where he nutmegged two players, skinned about three of them, and then he looked up and he was 40 yards from goal. And that was the issue with our front three a lot last season, I feel. Because the midfield was so compromised, Fabinho was playing at the back, Henderson was playing at the back, they weren't able to press up high and they weren't able to create space for the front three. They had to do it all themselves, and everything had to be inch perfect, almost from the halfway line to the goal, kind of like it was against Burnley for that first goal, for the Firmino one. So yeah, I think I think he's going to be somebody who massively benefits from even Van Dijk being back, the midfielders being back, and that front three. I think, you know, there was a lot of chat last season, we need to freshen them up, they're too old, they're this, that and the other. I think you'll see a different front three this year.
I think he misses the fans more than anyone, though.
Yeah.
I think, do you remember, it's like a lot of times at Hoffenheim at home, and I think he's having a little altercation with their right back, and he's going like raving his hand. And then Tottenham at home, I think, beat Tottenham at home in 2017, sort of 2-0, and he scores one goal, and the fans singing his name, and he's like that, throwing his hands up again, goes and presses it, and we go and score a minute later, and makes it 2-0. And I think he's someone who buzzes off the fans and the intensity that the fans bring, and I think that ups his game. So
he's massively a confidence player as well, because when we've seen when he's had a bad month, he has a really bad month. It's not like Salah where he can still get himself a goal.
Dropped at United away. When does that ever happen to someone like him? So I think he'll go up and he'll find his game back when the fans are there, in my opinion.
Yeah, I want to ask you a bit about Javi Ellis as well, Harrison, because he plays a little bit deeper in this game. He's had a great season at Blackburn, hasn't he? And we've had sorts of great reviews from him. What are you expecting from him this season?
I think it's hard to say straight away that he's good enough to be, you know, like an option, second choice option to come off. But he can play plenty of positions. You've seen him play in the tackle midfield role, he can play on the wing. I remember played Everton in the FA Cup and he was to be 16 at the time, and they couldn't deal with him. And I was thinking, this kid's better than what I imagined. Do you know what I mean? You hear about these kids coming through and you sign them at 16, you think, you know, they've got talent, but to play against him, he's been at Barcelona and he struggled, he's winning corners left, right and centre against him. And I just think he's technically unbelievable. He's got a football brain. Stuart Downing came out and said the other day, didn't he, that played with Harvey Elliott at 17 and Sterling at 17, and said and Harvey Elliott's understanding the game is miles better. And Harvey Elliott came out and said himself that he's not the fastest, but so he's got to find other ways to beat opponents and things like that. And he is all football brain, isn't he? And I was reading something this morning actually about him, and the coaches are meant to be he's meant to be the one that they're most expectations on, and he's come back pre-season in unbelievable shape and that, apparently. And yeah, I just think that his technical ability is definitely first team standard. I think it's just finding him confidence and games. But if he does stay, I think he'll get a chance to play in a round. And that's what you want from him. And 18 years old, it's not a bad thing to play in, is it? And, you know, to be around that squad. And yeah, I just hope he gets more chances than that, because I do really rate him.
Yeah, we shall see. Quickly, Dan. Well, I say quickly, talk for as long as you like, mate. I'm not the boss of you. But a bit on Keita and Milner. Of course, Milner's great for the goal, that clip ball to Tsimikas. For Keita, did okay. It's difficult to know what to expect from either of them next season in different ways, really. You know, Milner will always make himself available. It depends on the manager. Keita, you know, you don't know what you're going to get from him. You know, it'd be great, you know, if both of them in different ways could be really, you know, dependable options for the manager next season.
Yeah, in different ways, we're sort of in bonus territory with both of them, really. And, you know, I think Milner is just so pivotal to having in these situations, in the pre-season months. The standard he sets is just phenomenal, and he really relishes it. You can tell, you know, he's just really, really up for it, isn't he? So, yeah, I think you wouldn't bet against, you know, Milner being there or thereabouts, them managing him really well and just him keeping his levels up throughout the season. There's obviously, you know, we spoke about fullback before, but there's obviously the possibility of him popping up at right back or left back again next season. So it'll be within the pool's interest to make sure that, you know, he's in the best shape he can, but they won't have to worry about that with him. He massively looks after himself. Kite is the one who, again, you know, you look at Oxlade-Chamberlain, you think, okay, this needs sort of one or two things to go right for him to have a good season. With Kite now, you just feel like that list's sort of growing and growing, and there's just been no momentum throughout his Liverpool career, really. And to say that when we're sort of getting into the realms of 4 years or whatever it is, it's getting a bit now to the point where, like I said, it just feels a little bit like a bit of bonus territory with him, that if you can get sort of any run of games and he hits a purple patch for, say, you know, September, October, then I think the manager is to say, fine, okay, yeah, we'll take that, we get him back again and we see if we can get him through another 2 months where he massively benefits us. And we know obviously what the talent is there with Naby, but it's especially, you know, the microscope's going to be out now, isn't it, because Wijnaldum's gone, and it doesn't look like right now we're signing a midfielder. So the microscope will be out that, you know, once we get a couple of injuries, and, you know, if Naby's not there as well, then it's like back to this conversation that Twitter just seems to perennially have around players' fitness and why didn't we buy this player and why didn't we replace him and stuff like that. So I feel sorry for him in that sense, that, you know, in a way, contact around him does usually sort of give some added pressure, but then you just want him to put something together for a prolonged period, and you want him to sort of get hold of a game, to use a phrase, over a certain sort of season, because he can do that. He can just get hold of things for Liverpool. He can massively dictate, and he's the type of player who I think they were, you know, looking to build a side around in many ways, especially in midfield. We often looked at Coutinho, I thought, and we sort of looked at him as a luxury in many ways. I think Keita was one who they would have put things around him in order for him to flourish and dictate tempo and stuff like that. But, you know, the situation's changed now, so it'll just be one where, I guess, you know, very basic statement, but we just have to wait and see.
Okay. Just before we finish, I just want to talk about the pre-seasons generally, and I'll start with you, Andy, because we've always been focusing on Liverpool, as we do, as Liverpool supporters, and of course a Liverpool podcast. But I just noticed a few things over the last 24 hours about other clubs and what they are or aren't doing, and a few of them seem a little bit in disarray. I noticed Arsenal were due to go over to Orlando for reasons I'm not quite sure. Both of those games have now been cancelled, one of which was against Everton, potentially, and the other one was against Inter Milan. They've been cancelled, and on the back of that, I saw a few Evertonians complaining that they feel that they've only got a couple of friendlies booked in. That's more than Manchester City, who we don't think have got any in at the moment before the Community Shield.
I don't think they've got any players back.
Yeah, so no players and no friendlies booked in, and a COVID outbreak at the academy as well, I do believe. Liverpool suddenly look smart here and suddenly look very well prepared, and they've got 4 weeks over at this training camp. They've got two games, albeit half an hour ones, in the bank already, and this one coming up on Friday. I mean, things might change, and you know, these games at Anfield, you know, that have been announced, you know, we all hope will happen, obviously, but it's very much touch wood. But it does feel like Liverpool have made a lot of good decisions on what they're doing this summer, and it does look like they're going to be a lot better prepared for the season than maybe some other clubs are.
Yeah, it's great to see when you look on the Twitter and you look at interviews with the likes of Pep Linders and stuff, where they're going into details such as like how the grass is watered at times, and there's a sense it's been raining loads over there, and they say that the ground's holding up really well, and that's been really important to us. And obviously, you know, you'd assume that certainly the big clubs in the Premier League are going into this level of detail as well with the sports science and this, that and the other. But yeah, for Liverpool, it does look like everything's coming together very nicely for the next season. I mentioned there about us having a lot of the players back in terms of the Euros. A lot of the players were either knocked out early, like Robertson, and or they didn't necessarily play a huge amount of minutes. I think Shaqiri was our most played player in the Euros, the likes of Thiago and Henderson. Okay, while they'll come back, they'll need a bit of time to get up to speed again. They're not going to be fatigued from the Euros necessarily, from the game time they've been playing. So yeah, we're looking really good there. As you mentioned, Manchester City,
The MEN called it a mess. The article today, they said basically that Man City's summer's a mess and sort of what's going on. So this isn't just like, you know, Liverpool rose tinted glasses.
Yeah. And there was a piece in The Athletic recently as well where it showed when all the players were coming back and Liverpool do look a hell of a lot better than the likes of Man United and Man City. I think City, some of their players aren't coming back until like this is return to training on the eve of the new season, and I think some of their players are away on holiday in Amber List and Red List countries and have to come back and isolate for 5 days. So that's going to play a massive part. I think Man City play Spurs away on the first day. They're still the only team I actually look at in their other results. So listen, we're looking very good. Obviously there are issues with kind of African Cup of Nations and the injury records of the players last season. We hope that's just a freak, but it could be a case of with a squad slightly more prone to injury than others. So do still think we need to add a couple of players. I know it's not the podcast for this, but you know, we will have to wait and see, and that we've still got a long time to go. But in terms of like first three games, Norwich at home and maybe Henderson having to be on the bench, we're looking in very good shape compared to other teams, as I was saying earlier.
He'd be chuffed, Jürgen, won't he, Dan? This is what he wants. You know, he puts up with the tours, you feel. In fact, he just tells you. You know, he puts up with them, doesn't he? But 4 weeks away, the fact that there's so many great players available to him day one, you know, we know that the likes of Virgil and Joe aren't in complete full training yet, but they're still there about, you know. I mean, most of lads like Mo Salah, Sadio Mane, their first day of training, you know, is sort of very rare. So when he's looking around at what's going on with sort of other clubs, and he's thinking, I've got my boys out here, you know, we're having great sessions, we're having the quiz sessions and all that as well. He'll be feeling pleased.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mad statement and a mad link to make, but I think he'll be chuffed that the club have been sensible about it too.
Yeah.
You know, because there was the bad feeling around the Super League stuff towards the end of last season, and I was reading about, you know, Arsenal have tried to go overseas the last three pre-seasons because they want to play in some kind of cronky cup, or their owner wants them to, or something stupid like that. And I think that there's an element where Liverpool's hierarchy could have said, well, we'd like it if you could go.
We've lost a few quid recently. Yeah.
Could you try and try and shoehorn it in? They haven't. They've let the manager prepare it his way. And it just looks as though Liverpool have made life very easy for themselves whilst anticipating some of the pitfalls that are now coming to the fore. And, you know, as he says before, he's right. It matters to them massively when you read that they're taking the groundsman out with them to adopt pitches to how they want and stuff like that. And, you know, they went to Austria last year. They were obviously happy with it enough to go back there and maybe implement a few changes to the setup. But like you say, it's heaven for the manager, isn't it? I mean, he'd go to Scotland, I think, every summer if he could. If it was up to him, that'd be perfectly fine, wouldn't we all? But great place. But yeah, I think in that sense, you know, that ability to sort of have his Liverpool in the settings that he needs is huge. And I think it's huge when we look at things like what's happened with Arsenal and that Orlando Cup where Inter Milan have pulled out and them, and it's left Everton in a mess, for example. You know, you're not just taking a squad out, you're taking over 100 people. And so when you're managing it through the pandemic and everything else, I think Liverpool have just been massively sensible about it.
Yeah, I just something I forgot to say when I was chatting there. Like pre-season, it's the 2 months of the year that they have where basically everything's done your way. You choose the fixtures, you choose when you want to train, you choose how often you want to train. And you know, it's when you get to September or the start of August, then you've got kind of Skype and you have 12 down in Brighton after you've been in Denmark on the Wednesday night, and all that comes in, and that's all a nightmare. So you know, you want that to be, obviously taking out the cynical business side of it, when you go away and try and make a bit of money out of it, you're still in control. And for that to be taken away from teams, I think will be a real psychological blow to them pre-season. It might be, you know, in their heads as much as it is at their feet, but it's, everything's kind of up in the air, and that can't be good.
Can't be good. But the Reds looking good, and hopefully they look good again tomorrow night. Do join us. We're doing the live commentary on Hot Mic app. So if you're not on Hot Mic yet, it's an app that you download on your phone. It's completely free. Just use the code Anfield Rap when prompted, and it's completely free on your phone. And we do the live commentary along with LFC TV. No offence to Steve Hunter and the boys, who do a great job. But if you're after something a bit more raw, and we are going to have a drink as well, because it's the start of Craig Cannon Stag, then do come and join us on Friday. Friday, and yeah, watch that along with us on Friday night, and straight after, obviously, we'll be doing the post-match reaction show, audio and video, hopefully after an impressive Liverpool performance, and hopefully a few more of these young lads will shine. But in the meantime, thanks a lot to Harrison, to Dan, and to Andy. Hope you've enjoyed the inserts as well. I'm off to eat loads of butties. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.